And then the peacekeeper is at the door, signaling our time is up, and we're all hugging one another so hard it hurts. And all I'm saying is, I love you. I love you both. And they're saying it back, and then the peacekeeper orders them out, and the door closes. I bury my head in one of the velvet pillows, as if this can block the whole thing out. Someone else enters the room, and when I look up, I'm surprised to see it's the baker, Peter Mellark's father. I can't believe he's come to visit me. After all, I'll be trying to kill his son soon. But we do know each other a bit, and he knows Prim even better. When she sells her goat cheeses at the hob, she puts two of them aside for him, and he gives her a generous amount of bread in return. We always wait to trade with him when his witch of a wife isn't around, because he's so much nicer. I feel certain he would never have hit his son the way she did over the burned bread. But why has he come to see me? The baker sits awkwardly on the edge of one of the plush chairs. He's a big, broad-shouldered man, with burn scars from years at the ovens. He must have just said goodbye to his son. He pulls a white paper package from his jacket pocket and holds it out to me. I open it and find cookies. These are a luxury we can never afford. Thank you, I say. The baker's not a very talkative man, in the best of times, and today he has no words at all. I had some of your bread this morning. My friend Gail gave you a squirrel for it. He nods, as if remembering the squirrel. Not your best trade, I say. He shrugs, as if it couldn't possibly matter. Then I can't think of anything else, so we sit in silence until a peacemaker summons him. He rises and coughs to clear his throat.
I'll keep an eye on the little girl. Make sure she's eating.
I feel some of the pressure in my chest lighten at his words. People deal with me, but they are genuinely fond of Prim. Maybe there will be enough fondness to keep her alive. My next guest is also unexpected. Madge walks straight to me. She is not weepy or evasive. Instead, there's an urgency about her tone that surprises me.
They let you wear one thing from your district in the arena. One thing to remind you of home. Will you wear this?
She holds out the circular gold pin that was on her dress earlier. I hadn't paid much attention to it before, but now I see it's a small bird in flight.
Your pin, I say.
Wearing a token from my district is about the last thing on my mind.
Here, I'll put it on your dress, all right?
Madge doesn't wait for an answer. She just leans in and fixes the bird to my dress.
Promise you'll wear it into the arena, Katniss, she asks. Promise.
Yes, I say.
Cookies, a pin.
I'm getting all kinds of gifts today. Madge gives me one more, a kiss on the cheek. Then she's gone, and I'm left thinking that maybe Madge really has been my friend all along. Finally, Gale is here, and maybe there is nothing romantic between us, but when he opens his arms, I don't hesitate to go into them. His body is familiar to me, the way it moves, the smell of wood smoke. Even the sound of his heart beating, I know from quiet moments on a hunt. But this is the first time I really feel it, lean and hard-muscled against my own.
Listen, he says. Getting a knife should be pretty easy, but you've got to get your hands on a bow. That's your best chance.
They don't always have bows, I say.
Thinking of the year, there were only horrible spiked maces that the tributes had to bludgeon one another to death with.
Then make one, says Gale. Even a weak bow is better than no bow at all.
I have tried copying my father's bows with poor results. It's not that easy. Even he had to scrap his own work sometimes.
I don't even know if there'll be wood, I say.
Another year, They tossed everybody into a landscape of nothing but boulders and sand and scruffy bushes. I particularly hated that year. Many contestants were bitten by venomous snakes or went insane from thirst.
There's almost always some wood, Gail says. Since that year, half of them died of cold. Not much entertainment in that.